Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, all I want is a party doll. Come along with me when I'm feeling wild. To be ever loving, true and fair. To run her fingers through my hair. Come along and be my party doll.
Buddy Knox. Rock and Roll Friday. The Savage Nation. Let the games begin. This is a memorable day. I'm going to do something I've never done on the radio. Because it is the doldrums of August. We jokingly call it, what do we call it here? The end of August at the Hotel Savage. It's really the beginning of August at the Hotel Savage. But August is a throwaway month in the media. You listen to the news, it's the same kind of stuff. Democrats good, Republicans bad. Or you shift to the other channel, it's the reverse. And we see the news. And the news is pretty interesting. Obama, Michelle, on a $400,000 vacation. While she's a lady of the people, she has 26 of her own servants. Nobody in the world would believe change really meant the election of a monarch, but that's what you got. I never believed the word either of these two people ever said, but you did because you're a fool. 26 servants for Michelle Obama, and you think that they really care about you. Well, anyway, there's other stories here and there, but I'm not going to do it today. I have something else I want to do for you today. I would estimate on the Savage Nation that today, on a Friday, on an August day like today, the audience is probably 60% of a peak audience during a hot political season, 50-60%. And I know that my regulars, my fanatics, my loyalists are listening to every show that I do. And I'm going to do something I've never done before on the show, and I'll tell you what it is. It's a memorable thing for me, and I hope it is for you. I'm almost as excited as the first day I began in radio. I have almost the same degree of trepidation as the first day in radio 16 years ago, and I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I began my professional career as a writer. I've written novels, stories, poems, plays, songs, virtually none of them published. But unlike others who have been broken on the wheel of commerce and who either gave up or moved on to something else, I've always believed in myself. And although I've gone into other fields, I've never thrown out any one of these stories if I thought they were good. However, I lost them. I lost them for over 10 years. I couldn't find my journals going back 20 years, and it really bothered me because I knew one day I'd want them for a museum or an archive. But more important to me than the journals were the stories I wrote. Some of them I thought were really amazing. I have a new assistant who went into the old storage case for me and broke open the lock. He needed a professional lock-breaking tool. He couldn't get in there. It was so jammed with stuff. And so he went back yesterday, and he went in, and I told him what to look for, what the cabinets looked like. And sure enough, there they are. And now I have them right in front of me. And I looked at them yesterday. I was like a child with a new set of trains. And what I want to do for you today, for one or two segments, is read one of the stories that I pulled out at random called The Clown, dated September 15th, 1973, Nuuanu. Now, if you would rather I not read this story, call me at 1-800-449-8255 and tell me to simply bash liberals. Or, if let us say you're interested in this, call me at 1-800-449-8255 and tell me you want me to read some of this stuff, because I am here for you. I mean, I can impose myself on you and say I don't really care what people think, but that would be a lie. I do care very much what you think. I'm turning the show into something different over the next few weeks. It's going through a molting phase. You're going to have a couple of health and nutrition segments a week. You're going to have some writing segments, a couple of times a week. So after I read The Clown, if I choose to read it today, and that's going to be entirely up to you, you got to call. You got to adamantly tell me why I should read it or not read it. And I will get back to the news a little later on. I would think that I'm going to ask you to dig up your writings, your songs, your poems, and call this show. And if they're of any interest whatsoever to my call screener, we're going to have an amateur hour on the Savage Nation a little later of people's writings. Because I don't think there's a listener to this show. I would guess, I'd hazard a guess that anybody listening to this show has at some time in their life written something, whether it be a brief poem, a song, a play, a novel that never got anywhere, a short story, but you didn't throw it out. And you've been waiting for an opportunity to show how brilliant you are. And you can do it on this show. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Because there's a limit to how much I want to hear about politics. There's a limit to how much you want to hear my take on politics, although I told you I'm never going to abandon that entirely. We're moving into the most important election in many, many years, and then on to the most important presidential election in my lifetime to see whether or not we will throw the Marxist out. We don't really know where that's going to go in 2012. So it's quite a few years, and with God's will and your listenership, I'll be here for the whole ride. Yes or no on the story? Dan, you're the first up from OR. Go ahead. Dan, yes or no? Thumbs up, thumbs down on the story, the clown.
Thumbs up. I love your ideology. I completely agree with you. I'm curious to hear some of your stories and just get an idea about maybe where you're coming from and what you were thinking at that time.
That's amazing. Well, that's what I'm a little afraid of, the revealing. You know what I'm saying? Now, remember, it's fiction. What you're about to hear on this show is fiction. It is not Michael Savage. You get it?
Yeah.
Okay, and the names have been changed to protect the guilty, as they say. So there's one vote of yes. New York, Michael, go ahead, please. Yes or no on reading from the archives?
Must read the clown because I am a clown, and this is National Clown Week. Started.
Oh, my God, I told you I have a sixth sense of it. I know it. I swear to God, I reached into this file. I have hundreds of stories that were never published. And the one that I pulled out was called The Clown because I don't remember writing it.
I must tell you this. When people use clown as an insult, it irks me, so I say, too many politicians treat people like heels, but clowns touch their souls.
I agree 1,000%. It's funny you should mention it, because I was talking about Red Skelton to somebody at the beginning of the week, and I remember that the man painted hundreds, if not more, images of paintings of clowns. Over and over and over again, Red Skelton, a great comedian who touched millions of lives, painted clowns over and over again. Why would he do that, Michael? Was he looking for the image of his own self?
I don't know. He was a troubled person. He had some trauma in his life, but he was very decent, and he had a clean act. I guess he was just engrossed in what clowns represent in their best sense, which is the celebration of life and entertainment.
But isn't it funny that the movie people have destroyed even the image of a clown? That we've gone so far in this society that they had to destroy even the image of a clown who was filled with pathos and turn him into something else like a murderer or a pervert. Think about what I'm saying. When I grew up, a clown was an interesting, a creature that touched you, filled with empathy and pathos. But they were never murderers. They were never portrayed as sick. And along came the most degenerated generation in American history who gave us the current administration. And their cohorts in Hollywood distorted the clown into a child molester or a rapist or a murderer. I think that's amazing. They even had to destroy that. George Washington, they turned him into a slaveholder. A clown, they turned into a murderer. You name it, they perverted it. Am I right about that?
You're absolutely right, but we will triumph because truth will prevail, and we have to keep the good fight, and thank you so much for discovering that gem.
Okay, well, I'm going to read it, and I hope that you still think it's a gem. I made a decision. Don't call on this anymore. No one said no. I've got callers from around the country saying, definitely read that story. I had no idea this is National Clown Week because Obama's out of town. Okay, when I come back, The Clown, September 15th, 1973, handwritten manuscript, and that's it. We'll see what you think. Right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're taking a slight diversion. Uncovered in a warehouse, storage house, the missing manuscripts of Michael Savage. This is from September 15, 1973, Nuuanu, handwritten. It looks like calligraphy, called The Clown. It was Josko's first big night. Before the faded Velvet Auditorium stood a portly Algerian, warming them up with depressing tales of life in a Parisian monastery. The Algerian described the six-year-old on his first date, deposited by his father, a mean but impeccable dandy of a man who wanted nothing more to do with his offspring. The other frightened boys in their scant blue shorts, their terror of the brothers. The audience responded with a roar of respectful silence as the master of ceremonies improved upon the popular conception of homosexual monks. At the French school, it seemed, at least in the Algerian's mind, the brothers responded to nothing the boys would do except to their digressions. Through beatings, the boys came to know their teachers. The Algerian penetrated the 30 or so paying customers and the other 1,470 empty velvet seats with his piercing whinny of a laugh as he described how the boy eventually came to violate a different rule each day just so he would have human contact, even though the contact was through a stick applied to his back. Conversation between the boys was forbidden. Only the brothers had the God-given right to pass words. The boy was choking in this silence, and so each day a beating and a good yell from one of the brothers came to return him to the world of man. Josko finished his eyes, the most difficult part. Cheeks, nose, mouth, these were all plastic. But the eyes, his a soft brown in boyhood, now black, but so deep in their effect that they reached everyone they examined, they were needing alteration tonight. Josko had decided to play Michael the Archangel and needed piercing blue eyes. Color alteration was simple, a set of lenses, but how to preserve his piercing shine, that was his problem. The Algerian was finishing up by carrying the crowd through 11 more years at the Parisian monastery, each year punctuated by one visit at Christmas time from the boy's father, sometimes with a box of chocolates, other times with a shirt or other small articles, but the stay was never more than 15 minutes or half an hour at most. A strange theater company, they called themselves Le Théâtre du Merde. The Algerian and the Jew lived in a large, dilapidated Victorian mansion filled mainly with books and bronze statues of bulls, warriors, thinkers, a peddling water boy and horses, but none of woman. The Algerian shared his rooms with a Chinese girl, beautiful when he met her 4 years before. She was now dying of a discreet fungus infection that had destroyed half her face. The Russian lived alone. He had made three fortunes in his 31 years, the first in making pornographic films, the second as a writer of guidebooks about the world of plants, and the third he earned by marketing a plant remedy which reversed impotence that he had discovered on one of his many trips to the village people of New Ireland. The drug was bought by a large drug firm and earned the company a fortune while saving the souls of many desperate men. The clown had had two wives and one son. Each marriage ended due to his demanding need to be listened to. At any time of the night or day, Martin, as he was then called, would be up on an idea and in frantic need of an audience. As he learned over 10 years, an audience of one is the most difficult in the world. 500 or 1,000 people, or 350,000 if you consider his readership as an embodied audience, could be moved, albeit like a sluggish beast at first, but it could be moved. By singling out first one and then another and others of the assortment of faces, the clown had found he was able to spark a crowd, as he called it, into response. After the first harmonium of laughter, Josko would become a saint. Freed of earthly duties, he became a flashing form of magic that projected great feelings in the chest of the observer. His career as a clown had had a rough road. Once performing nightly in his own club to a small group of followers, Josko lost his mind one night and needed 19 months in a private institution in the mountains to re-find his center. This night was his first on stage since that day on the bridge 1.5 years before, when they had all gone in their own directions. Adjusting his huge canary bow tie in the rented theater, Josko flashed back on that day. reaching for his ancestral silver cup filled with a drink strange to the metal, he gulped the Jamaican rum and remembered that he was now drinking during the day, a bad sign. The only point that remained unclear in his mind was why he had chosen a bridge. Evaluating his makeup and this point in front of the long mirror which he had brought in for his performances, Josko heard the voice of Dr. Figment telling him to not focus on that awful moment when he came apart. Why crucify yourself with the question of what gave rise to the general sadness of your life and the moment of dissolution, said the doctor. Still, he could not quickly jump from the image of the small boy screaming as he was pushed over the railing. Insanity and the best West Coast lawyer gave him legal freedom, but even expensive psychiatrists were unable to free this man of his own conscience. In the long months in the mountains, after the usual cycle of hysteria followed by catatonia, the cycle repeated several times a day at first, but gradually diminishing in frequency until the man was able to have enough time between cycles to expend the performance, to experience the performance of his own life activities. He had done much reading. He had always been interested in the life activities of primitive peoples, but now he pathologically only read about such things as related to murder, cannibalism, patricide, genocide, and of course infanticide. I'll pause right there. I'm reading from The Clown, written in 1973. If you care to hear the rest of it, I may or may not continue when I return right here on The Savage Nation. If you find this, well, distracting or not of any interest, we can go back to Dem, Repub, Repub, Dem, The Budget, Omar Thornton's 9/11 call after shooting his co-workers, Sean Penn jealous that Wyclef Jean is running for the president of Haiti. God, that would be great if we had Sean Penn as the president of Haiti. He'd be for gone for good. Hillary chimes in on the Middle East BlackBerry ban. Stuff like that, other than The Clown. You decide, I report.
Savage.
Favorite aria, Agliacci, because we are all the clown. Don't you understand that? Only a matter of what your situation is, whether or not you're a clown. That's why the clown has universal appeal. You don't know that or you know that? I don't care how good you look in the mirror this particular minute while pumping iron. Inside, you know you're a clown to somebody at some time. Or you were, or you will be. I just want to hear the laugh. I want to hear the great dramatic laugh. No laugh. All right, so I'll give you the great laugh. Anyway, so I'm going to continue now. Most of the people are calling saying continue the story. It's only two more pages. The Clown, 1973. And it's about Josko the Clown. And he has an Algerian friend warming him up. And the Algerian talks about his life in a Parisian monastery where he wasn't able to talk. And Josko is getting ready to go on stage. When he broke off, he was sitting in front of a mirror. And in front of the mirror, as he's putting on his makeup, his clown makeup, he remembers his mental breakdown. And he's thinking back on it. And he remembers the doctor saying to him to stay focused and to not go back and back over what happened to him. So we go back again. Still, he could not quickly jump from the image of the small blonde-haired boy screaming as he was pushed over the railing. Insanity and the best West Coast lawyer gave him legal freedom, but even expensive psychiatrists were unable to free this man of his own conscience. In the long months in the mountains after the usual cycle of hysteria, followed by catatonia, the cycle repeated several times a day at first, but gradually diminishing in frequency until the man was able to have enough time between cycles to experience the performance of his own life activities. He had done much reading. He had always been interested in the life activities of so-called primitive peoples, but now he pathologically only read about such things as related to murder, cannibalism, patricide, genocide, and of course infanticide. Of course, he had had inklings before that day. Once on an overnight hike with his little family, the Nukes, as he referred to his little family, the Nukes, he had had a strong negative current overcome him. They were all camped out for the night on a ledge 30 feet above a crystalline stream, dammed up as a fish pond, when he felt the nearly overwhelming desire to throw his child to the waters below. Getting a hold of himself, as most sane men do when they feel such primitive urges, the man quickly awakened his wife and child, and startling them into their clothing, he insisted they make the 6 miles back right then in the moonlight and lantern, which they did. But then the night on the bridge, his wife's subsequent suicide, and his years in the mountains were mere memories now. Through the monitor, Josko heard the Algerian's last lines and lifted himself for the performance. That's the end of the clown. Now, there's one little note at the end of the story about what the stage set should look like. I don't know whether this was a short story or whatever, but the theater is, quote, shabby but elegant, velvet with gold ropes, a proscenium, boxes in a poor section of town. The stage, when the Algerian performs, a sign on the stage right says, "No responding, please." Throughout his performance, no audience response, except for an occasional cough, the sounds of traffic outside, or better still, impossible rock music penetrating from a neighborhood bar. When Josko performs, though, great response is required. He lives for these sounds. Opening night, 30 people, his comeback, a poor response. But in fades back to his earlier successes, full houses roaring. I guess there's another page I'm not going to bore you with, but it's the Victorian Mansion House and what it actually looks like for the movie version of Josko the Clown. All right, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So I took a chance. I walked on a tightrope with you today on the Savage Nation. It's something that was left me with cold hands, as though I was just beginning in radio. It's a very tough thing to do, but you know, after 16 years in radio, mainly doing politics 95% of the time, I have to tell you that I myself need to rejuvenate myself, and I need to open up some other parts of myself that have never been really, I don't know what to use the word, exposed or whatever on the Savage Nation. And one of them is some of the writings, for better or for worse. The other part is the nutrition side. I'm going to do a segment or two a week taking your calls on nutritional questions. I'm going to talk about my years as a social worker and what I observed actually being a social worker as opposed to what the phony socialists tell you social workers do. I'll tell you what I saw working with the so-called poor and how they were scamming the system. I'm going to do a lot of things I have not done on the show because it's time for a change. And the thing is this, you have all day long listened to talk radio. If you're a fanatic talk radio listener, you've probably been listening on and off since the morning. And I know that you know what the news is. You know, if there's a breaking story, you're going to get it from me. There is no breaking story right now. It's the news of the week. I could have reviewed it and just done rock and roll. I can do that. And you know what to expect and you'll be comfortable. But I don't want you to be comfortable. I don't want to be too comfortable. I want to take chances. I want to walk on a tightrope. 1-800-449-8255. Chris in Sacramento, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
I'm one of your hardcore listeners. I've been enjoying you throughout August so far. So that was a really interesting story, but I'm a little confused because you had framed the discussion as this generation has kind of destroyed the image of the clown, but then it seems like you read a story about a clown who threw his kid off of a bridge.
Very, very, very astute. Very astute. So beneath the fictional clown, we learn that he had been a man who killed his own child and was in a nut house for a number of years.
Yeah.
Is that what disturbs you?
That is, and I don't mean any disrespect because I think that, you know, anybody who will write a story and then read it takes a lot of courage. But to me, clowns have always seemed just as sad as they seem happy. And I think that a lot of the Red Skeleton paintings, what he was trying to capture was the whole idea of the sad clown.
I really don't know what I try to capture in 1973. All I can tell you is it's fiction. I never threw anyone off a bridge and I wasn't in a nut house. But, you know, that's the beauty of fiction. With fiction, your mind can go anywhere. You understand that?
Exactly, yes, I do.
And with good fiction, what you do is you delve into parts of your mind that you're afraid of. I don't think people understand what fiction is anymore. I think that people have read so many potboilers, so many formula books, they don't even know what fiction is anymore. I think it's been lost, except truthfully, in very small arenas of the world of literature. I think most popular fiction today is it could be written by a computer. It may be written by a computer, for all I know. I do come from another age where I was taught to delve into the subconscious and things of that nature. Let me say this. You know that I am a talk show host, and this is a nonfiction show. You also know that I've written five bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers, one after the other, and they were all nonfiction. And I have the biggest book of my life coming out in October. I never told you, this is not a self-published book. The book Trickle Up Poverty was bought for a phenomenally big advance and is being published by HarperCollins October 5th. It's one of the biggest books of the year. And I'm telling you that that book's going to be number one, and it's going to do a lot of things to this country for the better of this country. When you start carrying around a copy of Trickle Up Poverty and you see what I have on the cover of that book, that cover alone will become a billboard. My book and its title will become a message. You won't even have to say a word. You'll wind up being more powerful holding that book in your hand and showing it to people. What if 1,000 of you went to a Tea Party meeting and you held up copies of that book and all the message was Trickle Up Poverty? You wouldn't have to say one word to a politician. So when Nancy Pelosi bans town hall meetings, just hold up the book. Believe me, I have big plans for it. However, I'm telling you something else. At concurrent with that book, which I finished just a few weeks ago, really, I'm working on a novel now. I'm going back to my earlier self. Now, the book's not going to be called The Clown, but I have an idea that I can't share with you as to where some of the stories I'm going to read to you over the next few weeks from my archives are going to wind up in that novel. It's going to be a story, stories within a story. You got to understand, I grew up in museums, and I grew up in galleries, and I grew up in front of art objects, and I had a lot of time to think by myself, looking at sculptures primarily, when you think about it. And I thought long and hard about what would a man do? What would he sculpt this picture, this image rather? What would he do? How long would it take him to carve that out of marble or bronze? Really out of clay and made into bronze. What was he doing it for? He couldn't be doing it just to make a living. He was obsessed with some imagery. You understand what I'm saying? And when you think about that, that's what art is. It has to come from something very deep, or else it's simply, a bad movie with Alec, whatever his name is in it. A movie that any one of them could, do over and over again. Anyway, 1-800-449-8255. Mark in New York, go ahead, please. What do you think? Should I read these stories or not?
Absolutely. I'll tell you, Mike, you brought me out of a funk that I've been in for years. I've been studying this communist for 4 years, and I can't get my mind off anything else. Your story was very inspiring.
Well, he is a communist. He is trying to destroy America. He's as dangerous as they come. If we don't stop this man by throwing the Democrats out in October, in November, then throwing him out in 2012, we've lost the country. Now, that doesn't mean the Republicans are going to do much different. They're going to take us down the same road, only on a little slower pace. But the fact of the matter is, the man has to be stopped, because there is no question in my mind he and Michelle are absolute Marxists. I've seen this from day one. A year before he was elected, I was telling people what he was, and I'm glad that others in the media finally caught on to what a Marxist is. But I agree with your obsession. That's why I'm reading the stories. There's only so much I can do on that story, on that other issue.
Mike, I'm a musician. I haven't been able to play music for 2 years because I can't get my mind off this disaster, this imminent disaster.
This charlatan. How in the world do he and Michelle get away with it? The girl goes on a vacation in Spain that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. She lectures us on healthy living, and every time I see her, she's slurping an ice cream cone with her children. Do they not understand that people understand that she's a liar and a fraud? And the biggest joke is Vanity Fair nominates her as one of the best-dressed women on earth. Do they think we're that blind?
Embarrassment. They both are.
But I'm saying something else. The popular culture, are they that stupid that they buy into this?
They are. That's what got
us. All right, Mark, don't worry about it. You'll play again. You know, sometimes I play music on the show from Cuba, and I usually play pre-Castro Cuban music, and then I play for you music from Cuba after Castro, and I show you what happened even to the musicians in Cuba. If I play music for you from the 1950s, which I meant to do, I can't do it today, 1949, 50, 51, 52, yeah, they were living in a dictatorship under who was the dictator? Was it Batista? I think it was Batista, the dictator. The Cubans were happier under Batista than they are under Castro. They'd rather have a corrupt dictator than a corrupt Marxist killer. Because there's no difference between a Marxist killer like Castro, who came to power saying he would overthrow the dictator, and they wake up and they have not only a dictator, but a mass murderer on their hands. And now we have a left-wing establishment in America. They can't get enough of the mass murderer there in Cuba. Every day I have to wake up to another glorification of him or the other murderer in Venezuela, Chavez. And I'm supposed to say, how is this happening? That a man as deranged as Oliver Stone, and I have my sources, he's mentally deranged. Oliver Stone, in my opinion, is a mentally deranged man. He glorifies Hitler, then he backtracks 2 days later. And his father was Jewish, no less. The man is unstable at any weight. And here he is glorifying Castro and Chavez. You'd say, well, if it's only the musings of a deranged leftist director, you know, is looking for some publicity. You don't know how dangerous this is, because we've got a whole generation of young morons who simply don't know what they are living through. They haven't any idea. All they can do is text each other. 1-800-449-8255. When I come back, a few more calls on this, and then we'll go on to... Oh! Randall in Chicago has a Savage ringtone experience. I can't wait. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oh my God, does this bring back memories? Finished basements, sweaty dancing. If she's still living, she's in Boca Raton with a walker and an oxygen tank. Time and gravity catches up with all of us, believe me. That was a great line when I was young. I didn't know what it meant. Believe me, now I know what it meant. Time and gravity. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I hear that Mel Gibson has a new one-man play coming to Broadway. It's called Punching Judy. You know, I just read to you for Josko's first night called The Clown. And I found it as something I wrote in 1973 amongst hundreds and hundreds of stories and plays that I knew one day I would put together somehow. And I know that I will. And if, you know, if just fate has it such, the circle will be completed, where all of my early dreams will be fulfilled. I mean, there's some of them I'm never going to fulfill. Never. I'll never fulfill being a naval aviator, for example. When I was a little boy, I wanted to fly. In those days, what were they flying? I don't know, but I wanted to be a naval aviator. I couldn't be a naval aviator. I couldn't even be a pilot. But that's it. I mean, there's certain things I wanted to be, but you find out when you grow up what you can be and what you can't be. So I've done fairly well, but there's one thing that I do want to do is put together all of my writings that are worth anything, the good stuff, in some manner into a volume. I'm not ready to do that yet. By the way, I want to take a quick call on something and then get back to something else. New York, Rachel, what did you think of the fiction? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
Great to talk to you. I just want to say it's awesome. I just wanted to comment about your story. And I think basically it doesn't really fit the definition of a story. Because a story it's like a series of events that happen, and then there's a climax and a resolution. And what you read was basically just a soliloquy. And it was a nice soliloquy about a character study about this guy, Josko, and his people that he's surrounded with, and the life that he's living. But we don't really learn that much about...
Well, that's right. It's a scene in Josko's life. I agree. It's a scene in Josko's life as he's getting ready to go on the stage. Let me go back for a minute. Do you know the book, if I name Tristram Shandy to you, do you know what that is?
No, I've never heard that.
Are you a literary person, Rachel?
I just wrote a book. if that
well, you see, well, oh no, I'm not saying that you don't know what of which you speak, but I have always worked in the stream of consciousness. But the stream of consciousness as an art form was developed most definitively by Lawrence Sterne, Sterne, in his volumes called Tristram Shandy. Do you know when that was published? 1759 in Ireland. I'll bet you never heard of it.
I've heard of the stream of consciousness movement, but...
That's right, but you never heard of Tristram Shandy. Most people don't even know where stream of consciousness originated. I would argue it came from the Bible, but the point is that this was 9 volumes of stream of consciousness without a clear storyline. What Sterne did was, is he took a character called Tristram Shandy, And he walked them through, I think it was the streets of London or Ireland, I forget at this point. So let's say he sets out on a walk that day. So his character was going to go to the butcher store. And on the way to the butcher store, he goes through a tunnel in London. And there are a group of women who are ladies of the night. And he gets sidetracked with a lady of the night. And he gets taken up to one of her rooms. And in one of the rooms, something happens. And he's drawn into another story. And he never gets to the butcher shop. That could take 50 pages. Now, that's called stream of consciousness. In today's world of mock literature or pseudo-literature or generated storytelling, every story is almost follows almost the same pattern. And I don't knock it. We all need a good story. You know, a beginning, a middle, and an end, the way you learn in college. But I don't think that way, and I don't write that way. I don't even do politics that way. And that's why I uniquely do what I do. Let's go quickly to a caller. Randall in Chicago, tell us your ringtone tale. What happened?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Savage. I actually received a job as a result of having the liberalism as a mental disorder ringtone on my phone.
You got a job? You didn't lose a job? My God, how did that happen?
Yeah, so I run into an old CEO who I barely had any interaction with, was just being polite and saying hello. The wife happens to call. My phone goes off. He hears the ringtone, strikes up a conversation, said he had no idea I was that bright, making a little joke there. And he's ended up putting me in contact with the right people, and I just received a job offer today due to his reference.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? So you bought liberalism as a mental disorder as a ringtone?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, hey, that's a positive note. I was sitting here trepidatiously fearing you lost the job, but you got a job because of Michael Savage ringtones. Wonderful.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, Rock and Roll Friday. What is this song I've got already? Maybe? Chantel's Maybe? I just want to hear them hit the chords. Wait. These girls could sing, boy. Yep. Brings back memories, all right. Or can give you new memories. As long as it doesn't give you nightmares. It is the Savage Nation. In the first hour, I did not read from Mel Gibson's new one-man play entitled Punching Judy. I read from an archival story I found in my archives entitled The Clown, Josko's First Night, September 15th, 1973, written in Nuuanu. And we talked about stories, and we talked about other stuff. We talked about styles of storytelling. Tristram Shandy, I talked about. Who really, I would say, invented the stream of consciousness technique in his nine volumes, Lawrence Stern, nine volumes in 1759, and yet many writers today who even get degrees in literature never heard of him. It's amazing, but there it is, just a little something for everybody. There are stories. You want me to do politics? I'll do politics. Or I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If you're anybody, and you want to read something on this show, you want to try Amateur Hour like Ted Mag, the old Ted. Don't they have that now, American Idol? Isn't that Amateur Hour of today? In my day, it was Ted Mag's Amateur Hour. I never watched it because I didn't like amateurs. I didn't like them now. I don't like them now. I don't watch American Idol. I never watched it in my life. I like to watch professionals if I watch them at all, whether it be professionals in the movie. I never, ever pay attention to their politics unless they inject it into the storyline. I just, if they're a good actor, I don't really don't care if they're a communist. Most of them are communists, so what are you going to expect? You're going to rule out everyone as a communist in Hollywood. You'll be watching your own home movies. I really don't pay attention to their politics unless they push it into the script and I turn the show off. It happened to me during the week and something. I forgot already what. Here's a story. Unless you want to read one of your bad poems on the show instead of going to a bookstore, you can call a show 1-800-449-825. Thinking about God calms believers and stresses atheists. That's right. Researchers have determined that thinking about God can help relieve anxiety associated with making mistakes. However, the finding only holds for people who believe in God. When atheists think about God, they get nervous. I don't blame them, because they're going to have to answer to him at the end of the road, and they know it. There's a famous big-mouth atheist who's dying of cancer right now. His whole life published books, God doesn't exist, God should drop dead, there is no God, bah, humbug, you're all fools. The guy's dying of a horrible cancer, the poor man, and all he's talking about is God now. The old joke about, in a foxhole, or no atheists in a foxhole. The reason we can have atheists in America is they're protected by God-fearing men in Afghanistan. The reason we can have atheists with big mouths on the internet is because they're protected by men with blue uniforms and guns and clubs. That's why they can be atheists. Marsha, New York, WOR. Go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, Michael, well, thank you. I wrote a poem for you, and I actually mailed it to you when you weren't feeling well.
Hold it. I can tell by your voice already it's a setup.
No, absolutely not.
Come on, you're doing it just... You're trying to ruin my good mood. You're trying to, pee on my parade. I can see it coming from a mile away.
Let me read it to you.
What's your real name, though? Come on, stop with the Marcia.
It is Marcia. Absolutely. M-A-R-C-I-A.
You're a woman or a man?
I'm a woman. I have a deep voice because I'm a smoker.
I'm going to take a chance that you are what you say and you're not out to ruin my good day. Okay, go ahead.
Michael Savage, a national treasure. For years in the air, he gives us great pleasure. He's smart and he's sassy. He's smart and he's sassy and always comes through. And most of all, he has a big heart. So let's raise our glasses and make him a toast to our talk show man who is the most. We really don't need a reason. Michael Savage is a man for all seasons.
Very beautiful, Marcia. I think you called once before, didn't you? Didn't we speak on this show years ago?
We talked about going to the Catskill Mountains and people putting food in their pockets.
Well, Marcia, you're a sweetheart. You've got a sweet soul, I can tell you, and I'm going to send you a free copy of Band in Britain. It's what I've got to give out today. Thank you very much for listening. 1-800-449-8255. Susan in New York City on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Well, it's a real pleasure to talk to you because I very much enjoyed the story. One thing I like is that you're opening up to other sides of yourself, and I think that will stimulate a lot of creativity in the people that are listening, because politics can only go so far, and it really does become very tedious after a while.
Yes, yes.
And
and I know that there's nobody else in talk radio who can do what I just did, because they don't have an archive, they never wrote, they never had the background I had, nor the experiences, so it's uniquely me.
Yes, and the stream of consciousness that you're talking about, it's very important. For one thing, I think it was this week that you were talking about God, that you know that there's a God, and terrible things would have happened to you a million times over, but you knew that God was there for you. I think that's very important. And I think, in fact, that's one of the things that maybe you could be discussing one time on the show, that people could call in with their experiences of God, because the truth is that I believe that's why we're really on Earth, to make a connection with the God who created us and the world. And
given that the most intelligent atheist on Earth cannot disprove the existence of God, and the most devout religionist cannot prove the existence of God, given that we are in the middle, those of us who don't know what to think, I think those of us who do believe in a grand creator, have an obligation to share it with others.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And I believe that people that pray get inspiration from the divine, and for one thing, they're more sensitive people. There's less violence. There's a lot of caring in the way they express themselves toward others. And I think that's what the world is lacking.
I agree. You know, I once wrote a thing called God is a Conservative, and I proved it. Someone said, bah, humbug, how can you prove it? I said, read the Ten Commandments, fool, goodbye. I mean, none of the Ten Commandments would be a liberal platitude, would they?
No.
In fact, the liberal, the protocols of the liberals are the opposite of the Ten Commandments. If I start with the first commandment and go through the tenth, the liberal would try to weasel around every one of them and say the opposite is the way they live their lives. So,
yes.
I mean, God is a conservative. It's as simple as that.
And that's why I meant...
Well, I don't want to beat people up with the fact that I'm going to try and prove God exists, because the atheist is immune to that until they get into trouble, or, God forbid, they have a loss beyond any comprehension of their... beyond any ability for them to deal with it mentally. They fall apart, so they go to a psychiatrist, another crackpot who gives them a drug, and then the doctor has another friend on drugs, but that doesn't help for a while. Unless they do find something within themselves to save them, they're going to be lost forever. Now, the question is, how does a man who's lost or a woman who's lost find God? That's the real... You know, it's not only a matter of whether God exists, but how do you find God, right? That's really the issue. A lot of people would say, you know what, I would pray to him if I knew he existed. Why does he make it so difficult to find him? Why is he so invisible? In other words, the most intelligent man on earth who may be open-minded would say, I don't mind if God existed. I would pray to him, but prove to me he exists, because I'm a rationalist. I've never seen him. I would say, my friend, look out your window. Touch your hand, and you'll see him. They don't even understand what they said when they say they don't see God. How can you not see God when you see a leaf moving in the wind? But I think a lot of this is lost on people who are so detached from reality, in the sense that they're detached from their own bodies to start with. You know how many times I have tried to tell people that sexuality is part of godliness? I don't think people understand this. They assume that when you say God or godliness, that you're some kind of prude who's not in touch with your earthiness. The exact opposite is true. I think earthiness leads you to God, because we do have an animal body. And the only way to God is to understand we have an animal body with animal urges, with animal impulses. And unless you understand these animal impulses are very much you, you're going to always be detached from your body, and you're never going to really reach God in the way God needs to be reached, which is through body and soul and mind. Does that help anybody? No. See, I just came up with that little sermon for you, because it's Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and many of you don't go to a temple or a church anymore, but I just gave it to you anyway. That's all. So, what do you want to do on the Savage Nation? You want to do politics? We will do that. I'll read you all the stories of the day. New Al-Qaeda leader lived 15 years in the U.S. Really? First time a leader of our enemies has so intimately become familiar with American society. Now, you have to ask yourself how this guy got into America. Answer, Bill Clinton. Answer, multiculturalism. Answer, unprotected borders. Answer, foolish liberals who think that by catering to our enemy, we're going to somehow placate them and convert them to nice Americans. Morons, idiots, fools, they'll kill us all. That's why I don't want to do politics right now. I got lots of people calling about with poems. I'm going to hear them. I really want to hear them. But first, right now, I want to hear another piece of rock and roll. I'm looking at my new song sheet. I have La Bamba, Richie Valens, no. Dream Lover, Bobby Darin, no. For Your Precious Love, Jerry Butler, no. What is this song I'm thinking of? For Your Love, I Would Do Anything. Who was that? I can't sing at all, but who did that? Does anyone know who did it? It was Al something or other, wasn't it? He had a great voice. God, there were some great voices out there. Whatever happened to the great male voices? All I hear now are like whiny chicks in elevators wherever I go. I go into, wherever I go, and like I can't even shop anymore. I go into Macy's, it's this whiny chick music. It's whiny, like Twitter music. I don't understand it. I can't wait to, like, shop, pay, and get out of there. Where are the men, the singers? What happened to this country? The only men who sing are in rap bands, and you can't even hear half the words they're saying. Some of them have great male voices. I mean, they ought to, you know, ditch some of the accompaniment and start to actually sing a song. So we played Maybe by the Chantels. We got Frankie Lyman, don't know. I love Party Doll by Buddy Knox. I like that the best. I mean, I'm going to Honeycomb, Jimmy Rogers, nah. Tallahassee Lassie, Freddie Cannon, doesn't move me. How about Party Doll, just for a second, before I take a caller on the set? I love that song.
All I want is Party Doll. Come along with me when I'm feeling wild. To be ever loving, true and fair. To run her fingers through my hair. Come along and be my Party Doll.
This was a great period of music. You know, you could picture this guy. These were the guys who saved us in World War II. The Kentucky sharpshooter who also could play guitar and sing like a man instead of whining like a sissy. This was America. Look what we have now. Take a look around you. Take a look at the leadership. Could an ACLU have ever lived in a time of this guy? Would he have been afraid of this creep from Brooklyn who went down to Tennessee to tell him how to run his life? I'll stop right there. I'll tell you what he would have done to him. One day there'll be an America again. I have a dream. I have a dream one day again we'll have an America built on men like this instead of these whiny, backstabbing, half-human beings. But you see, I told you I wasn't going to lose my temper today. I had fun yesterday on the show. Turn it off. All right. Yesterday I defined Elena Kagan, the new Supreme Court Justice, saying in my day the most she could have run was a pickle store. I called her the pickle woman. And, you know, I spoke to people. They told me they heard that. Everyone heard that. He said he has a, one guy says he has a 10-year-old daughter, and she said, you know, I love Michael Savage. And then he said to her, well, what did he say today? He said that Elena Kagan looks like a pickle woman. And she liked it. The child liked the idea of Elena Kagan as a Kagan as a pickle woman. You know why? Because Elena Kagan on the Supreme Court is a pickle woman. Instead of having a black robe, she should have a white smock. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Gonna find her.
Dance to this one. Dance with a girl to this song. Who came up with a thing like this? Imagine dancing with a girl to this tune. I mean, she's crazy. Who would go out with you if you danced to this music? Turn it off. Break that record. You got to find a little bump and grind that someone can relate to on a Friday who's old and already with the walker and the oxygen thing and can't dance anymore and wishes they could, and it's not funny because it'll happen to you if you're lucky enough to live long enough. Other than if you're the Rolling Stones or Madonna, who are on some kind of baby juice for the rest of their lives with mother's milk mixed in with some kind of Kickapoo joy juice, because I've never seen anything like a 70-year-old still strip-teasing in a garter belt. It's unheard of. Can't they get off the stage already and stop it? I thought to myself as I moved on to the next song. How about Tears on My Pillow by Little Anthony and the Imperials? Now you're talking about a dance. This was another story. This led to many a marriage. And he tripped that.
Remember me.
I mean, it's a fact of life. What do you make believe it wasn't in those days? The sewing needle. People did those things. It was horrible. I know it's a crime. Okay, we know that. I'm not making a joke of the end of life. Don't get mad at me already. It happened. Believe me, it happened plenty.
In my heart, caused by you.
Now it's clean. You go right into an Obama doctor and they... throw the baby right in the toilet for you. Just clean. It's modern. All right, you got the picture. No point in having nasty little children. Cuts into buying the shoe, going on a vacation like a dirty slut on a bad cruise ship. You don't need a nasty child. You can get a dog. What do you need a child for? Break the chain of humanity. Go ahead. Be the first in your entire family lineage to not get married and have a child because you can't find a man perfect enough for you. Go ahead. Tell yourself that that's the reason. It's horrible. The whole U.S. is crumbling. No birth rate. 1.6.
Seven. Just a dream. Just a dream.
Just a dream.
All our plans and all our schemes.
Falsetto. I never liked falsetto singing, other than Frankie Lyman. I like a deep male voice in a song, generally. Ah, a different story now.
Why do
Now that's falsetto, but backed up with great voices. This is full of testosterone, even with falsetto. 13 years old, he was going out with 21-year-old girls. Of course, I mean, he hit the bad. He hit the brick wall from drugs. Died young. Why do so many artists get screwed up with drugs and alcohol? Well, turn it, who cares? Everyone gets screwed up with drugs and alcohol. You don't have to be an artist, you know what I mean? It's around, that's why life is tough, so people reach for a crutch and they get stuck with it, and they can't get out of it. Then they kick it, no one wants to be their friend anymore. And then they wind up listening to talk radio disgruntled about Obama. What are you going to do? First lady's $375,000 vacation. Unbelievable. How does she get away with this? How does this woman get to answer the vermin in the media? I mean, other than the Drudge Report showing the pictures of her cavorting around Marbella, you wouldn't know it. You'd think she's home, you know, with her vegetable garden while you're looking for a job. Unemployment, minus 131,000 jobs. Bad news everywhere you turn. Donna Shalala detained at Tel Aviv airport. Donna Shalala, one of the worst humans in American history. What she did to this country. What was she going to Israel for? To beg forgiveness? The tomb of the unknown Jew? What, is she kidding me? Why would Donna Shalala go to Tel Aviv airport? What, to mock the Jews? They have no shame, these people. That'd be like Bonnie Frank making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. I wonder if they let him in. I don't know. I think they'd let him in. I think Bonnie Frank probably brings stimulus money for Israel. Of course they'd let him in. Sure, I got a plane load of cash. It's all yours. Take it. I just need a victory parade down the Jerusalem way. 1-800-44, whatever. BP may drill again in an oil spill reservoir. Let him drill. I need the gas. I got boats, cars. I need gas. I'm not going to revert to banana peels. I'm sorry. I know Jane Fonda likes to say she has a bus with her. Yeah, right, bus with banana peels. Tell me about what she flies her jet with. Banana peels? Look at these stories out there. I got a migraine. Tiger fades away. There's a joy in that, to see an Arab. Once his wife dumped him, he lost his mojo. Wants to know. See, this is there's a moral tale here with Tiger Woods. All you bad boys out there, listen to me. You see Tiger Woods, top of the world, cheating on his wife, playing golf like the best. Then the wife finds out, and she beats him up, gives him a good beating in the car, and they tell you, oh, it wasn't a beating. She was trying to get him out of the... Remember that fiction put out by the Associated Press? That she found the car rolling down the hill, and she broke the glass in to try and save him. What did I tell you the first second? She broke the glass in because he ran away from her. I mean, everything that you read, you have to understand is a lie. So now look what happens. The Norwegian beauty takes everything, leaves him, and he can't get a ball in a hole. Nothing. Good. He deserves it. He got what he deserves. What, I should feel bad for him? There's a joy in this. Watching a neighbor. You remember that? Lin Yutang said, joy consists of getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching a neighbor fall off the roof. In essence, these are our neighbors. Anyone in the media is our neighbor. We live through the media today. Everything is, whoever you see or read about. No matter how popular they are, you pray something bad happens to them so that you feel better. You don't feel it's only happening to you. That's human nature. What are you going to do? Why would she go to Spain? Spanish police shut down beach for first lady and daughter. What's with the Alhambra? And why did she choose Spain? Why couldn't she go to San Diego? You know what I think about? Think about Michelle Obama's embarrassing disconnect from reality, number one, her arrogance, number two, and the preposterous nature that in a time like this when her husband has messed up the entire economy and society, she goes to Spain instead of flying to America, to San Diego, and say, visit America. Why would she go to southern Spain to meet with King Juan Carlos, a real prize, and Queen Sofia at their summer residence on the island of Mallorca? Oh, I loved Mallorca when I was young. I went there. Today, I hear it's like Miami Beach. When I went to, I was in Mallorca in 66, I think. When it was just emerging from a sleepy artist colony in a way, so they were really building small condos. And I, talk about literary, you want to see connection. I went there for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons I went there is because the poets were there. I remember on my Dia de Mallorca was the Robert Graves, the poet, big deal. No one ever heard of him anymore. Robert Graves walked around with a black cape up in the hills, coming down with the cobblestone, and all the girls and the boys would run after him like he was God. God only knows if anyone remembers who he is. But on the dopey island of Mallorca where I stayed, there was a poet, a couple of good writers. There was Alan Sillitoe, who had a big hit at the time called, he had written Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. Didn't he write Rosemary's Baby? I don't remember, but he wrote Saturday Night and Sunday Morning. British, you know, laborer class. I hate the word working class. Everyone works. I'm working class. I'm working right now. What does working class mean? I love when they say, born to a working class family. Who the hell is the writer? What was he born to? Royalty? I mean, working class. Everyone in America works except those who work for the government or vote for Obama. They don't work. They live on my work. But Alan Sillitoe was a factory worker, let's make it clear. And he wrote a great book about what it was like to be an English factory worker in the 50s. It became a big movie. I loved that. So I remember meeting him in Mallorca. Here I was, I don't know, a kid. I couldn't have been, I don't want to tell you my age because you know it anyway from every source on the earth. I was young, so I go there, I meet these writers, hang out, you know, to drink like them, big deal. They were all drunks in those days. In those days, a writer had to be a drunk. I don't know where that came from. Nobody can write when they're drunk. They couldn't write then when they were drunk, and they can't write now when they're drunk. I have no idea where that came from. You had to be a drug addict or an alcoholic to be a writer. The exact opposite is true. I remember Huxley wrote that how did he put it? It was so beautifully written. Is that we perform or we write despite our weaknesses, not because of them. Despite them. In other words, despite being a drunk, you write. I don't understand it, but he would drink himself. He'd go to this bar. I remember to this day the name of the bar. To this day in Palma, it was called Bar Africa. So here I am, this young kid, you know, and I made some friends with the guys there. You know, there were writers, hangers-on, would-be writers, expat, you know, basically bums. And Alan Sillitoe would drink and fall asleep on a bench. And his lovely wife, Rosemary, would sit there with the baby. They had a young baby. She was like Madonna and child. And she would, like, take him home, you know, in the car. I thought that was so romantic. It wasn't romantic, but when you're young, you have these distorted views of what romance is. It was a tragedy. The kid had a drunk for a father. And then I met a wonderful poet, and Riven Todd, probably long dead. He was a nature poet. I loved him. A Garland for a Winter Solstice. Beautiful poem. What did you just write? Sillitoe just died this year. You just said, huh. Is Riven Todd still alive? He did write The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. I knew it. Yeah. And then there was Riven Todd. So from those years, I started writing, you know, the drivel. You start with the drivel. You start with the little thoughts and the this. And as you develop, you write longer pieces and longer pieces and longer. And then eventually, if you're smart enough and lucky enough, you become a talk show host. And then you find your archives 40 years later. And then you read one of them on the air and you're still living. And you say, is this not happiness? That's what it is, ladies and gentlemen. You know, and without you, I'm sorry to sound corny, without the audience, there'd be nothing. But I always knew there'd be an audience. You see, this is what I'm trying to tell you. I always had faith. I always knew there'd be an audience for me. I always had faith in myself, and so I didn't throw my stories away. Like the one I read today, I don't even remember I had written it. I'm not saying it's great, but it's a good sketch, okay? It's a good scene in Josko's life. It's something that will appear somewhere else. Josko will live in a way that I can't tell you about right now. I know it's going to be incorporated in something different. And what I'm saying is I always had faith. I always knew that somebody up there liked me, so to speak. And I pray he continues to like me. And boy, am I not a perfect man. I am perhaps as flawed as they come on the earth, racked with pain and doubts like everybody else on the earth. Okay, but the fact of the matter is I get up every morning and I come up here and I get on the air like everybody else. I don't pretend to be Mr. Perfect. I never did. I just don't want people to confuse me with something I'm not. And if you've heard something today that you didn't know existed, I mean, good for you. Great. But it's always been there. There's nothing new in me. Nothing. I've always been the same man. So anyway, I was talking about 1966, Palma de Mallorca, because our great first lady is now in Palma visiting the king. I didn't visit the king, by the way, when I was there. I didn't visit the king at the time. But I tell you what I do remember from Palma, other than the drunk poets. And I don't think they're around anymore. There were old ladies, old Spanish Catholic ladies who wore black, all black. They didn't wear burkas, but they were very close to burkas. They wore all black clothing, even in the summer. That's how the women dressed in these villages in those days. It was astounding. And they were all very gnarled, and they had these incredible faces of time and of difficult lives. I'm not saying that there was some revelation in that. It was just very much like living in a Picasso painting. It was like walking through a Picasso painting. The villages outside of Mallorca, the women in particular, the older women. And then as years went on, as I moved to San Francisco many years later, I moved here in 1974. We still had old Italian ladies wearing all black in the streets of North Beach in San Francisco. And I remember to this day, I would talk to some of these women. I would start a conversation with them about the simplest of things. And I'll never forget one of the women in the streets of North Beach. Like, I remember to this day, the street even, in front of which bakery? It was an Italian-French bakery on the corner of Green Street. And what's that other one? Columbus and Green. And I struck up a conversation with one of these beautiful old Italian ladies in all black. There were none left, by the way. None. They're gone. I don't see one left. And we were talking. I don't remember what it was about. But she said to me, I'll never forget it as long as I live. She said to me, she said this. She said, there's nothing on earth that a little garlic and a little wine can't cure. I think she was right. And I'll be back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation listening to Topsy Part 1 before the hour comes to a close? Thank you very much. I want to thank my producer Beowulf Rockland, my technical producer Phil Newmark, and my associate producer Doug Lynn. I've never done that. I have to do that. No, it's like jazz songs years ago, you know, on the coronet. Da, 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 da. All right, turn it off. They can't hear me. They can't. You cannot expect people to listen to me and music. So there she is in Mallorca visiting the king, and this is what burns me up. The fraudulent nature of the Michelle Obama mythology is what bothers me. You know, the king has no clothes and all of that. Here we have a deep recession, people out of work, and instead of flying to San Diego with her entourage of 50 girlfriends or whatever, and Secret Service agents, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, why couldn't she fly into San Diego where the weather is gorgeous? They have some of the most beautiful beaches and restaurants on earth. Why? What does she have to go to Spain for? Because it's a socialist nation. You don't understand that, huh? You can't put two and two together? And she's meeting with the king. Why? Because she thinks she's a queen. You don't understand this, do you? Now, here's the double part that bothers me. Okay, the first lady. She goes into ice cream stores, and she's eating ice cream through every city she's in, ice cream. Goes into the cathedral in Granada, and before she goes in ice cream, chocolate for mom, melon and raspberry for a daughter. This is the same Michelle Obama who lectured America about healthy eating, hired some whack job fake nutritionist who's going to tell you to stop obesity in America, we have fat children. What is she stuffing ice cream down her... Why? You know, do as I say, not as I do. You don't understand the hypocrisy? At every turn, the woman is a walking hypocrite. Now you say, well, why are you going on and on? How come you didn't do it when Laura Bush was in office? Because Laura Bush didn't go to Spain on her vacation. Laura Bush went to Crawford, Texas with her husband. They had dignity. They had self-respect and self-control. We have two adolescents in the White House abusing us. They're abusing America, they're abusing the Republic, they're abusing Air Force One, they're abusing the military, they're abusing their power. Mark it down, this is an abuse of power. And I, for one, resent it. That's how I see it. There's only so much hypocrisy you can take until you finally say something. Obama's hit Spanish Beach with help from police. She could have gone to San Diego, gorgeous. Or Honolulu, where her husband was allegedly not born. She could have gone to why? She couldn't go to a beach in Honolulu. Why does she have to go to Spain? Why? Why? There's a recession. The money could have been dispersed in Honolulu or in San Diego. Why is she in Spain? What's the message? Now, before I close this little soliloquy on Spain, I want to say something that many of you don't understand. The Cordoba Institute in New York is the name of the Islamic front group that wants to build a mosque right near Ground Zero. It's a very contentious issue that has finally shown Mayor Bloomberg to be the double-talking, swinish, yellow-bellied liberal that he always has been, amongst others. And that's because you just got to follow the money to understand how this plays out. But if you don't understand how this works, I will explain it to you. This is a victory construction where they destroyed a piece of New York City. They're building a mosque at the site of one of their military victories. Now, why do I say that? Well, others have said it, but they haven't gone as far as I'm about to go. Let me explain it to you in detail. There was a Jewish temple in Israel that was founded by the original Jewish people. First temple, destroyed by the Romans. Then the Jews were driven into exile. They came back from another exile, the Babylonian exile. They built another temple. That temple was destroyed. Do you know what's on the site of the ancient Jewish temple? It's called the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And every time you hear a word, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, you hear, oh, one of the holiest sites in Islam. It seems to me there are an awful lot of holy sites in Islam. Everything they build is a holy site. But Christianity has no holy sites. Jews have no holy sites. Only Muslims have holy sites. Every time you hear it, the vermin in the media, they cover up, right away they follow up with, oh, Al-Aqsa Mosque, one of the Temple of the Mount, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Actually, it was the holiest site in Judaism. But after the Muslims conquered the Jews, they built a mosque on the rubble, or on the foundation, rather, of the Holy Temple of the Jews, which is just what they're doing in New York City. Schmucks, morons, idiots. Now, I have to explain this to you, so I will do so. Your great mayor, the billionaire, doesn't know this? Then I will explain it to the genius schmuck, Mayor Bloomberg, what is going on right underneath his stupid head. New Yorkers don't want the mosque there. And the people who are building it are the most insensitive oafs I've ever seen. Don't buy the line they want to bring religions together. What a bullcrap story that is. If they wanted to bring religions together, they wouldn't drive religions apart. If they wanted to calm people about Islam, they wouldn't be building a mosque two blocks away from the site where Muslims destroyed the Twin Towers and killed 3,000 Americans, would they? No, they're building it because it's a site of a military victory. There's no other explanation for it. And you don't have to look any further than the name the Cordoba Institute or the fact that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, meaning Temple Mount, was built upon the ruins of the Jewish temple to celebrate a Muslim victory over the Jews. When you people will wake up, it may be too late. It's difficult being awake 24/7 for as many years as I've been awake, but I've been awake 24/7 for decades now. And I ain't Rip Van Winkle. I'm Michael Savage. So we have some rock and roll here on the program to take us out the door. Guys, let's play one of the good pieces. How about Dream Lover by Bobby Darin? And that'll get us through this hour. There's another big, big hour coming up. You can go to michaelsavage.com to see some of the stories I have talked about and will be talking about. And this is 32 seconds out. It's a little soon. I got to write another one-liner before the end of the hour. I already did my one-liner. Well, you've listened to an historic day in the Savage Nation, that's all I can tell you. I read The Clown. I've introduced Josko. Let's pray for the Republic. With these two in power, pray for the Republic twice. Where are you with a love oh so true? And the hand is like.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up! is everybody always picking on me?
That's him on his knee.
On the Savage Nation today, we also have new rock and roll. I'm not going to read you all the songs, but here's the ones I'm going to be playing. Let's see. Ray Charles, What I Say. Clyde McFadder, Lover's Question. Bobby Freeman, Do You Wanna Dance? The Everly Brothers, Bye Bye Love. Richie Valens, La Bamba. Bobby Darin, Jean Lover. How about the Flamingos, I Only Have Eyes for You? How about the Barbettes? 1, 2, 3, look at Mr. Lee.
1, 2, 3, look at Mr. Lee. 3, 4, 5,
how about the Skyliners, Since I Don't Have You?
I don't have plans and schemes, and I don't have hopes and dreams.
Or Tweedly D by Laverne Baker. Searching by the Coasters. Tossing and a Turning by Bobby Lewis.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Just thinking of you. Baby, things weren't right. When I was tossing and turning.
These are great. Rock and Roll Friday. Put Your Head on My Shoulder. Paul Anka. Jim and Dandy by Laverne Baker. Maybe the Chantels. Of course, Frankie Lyman, Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Buddy Knox, Come and Be My... God, these are great. Shaboom, The Chords, Donna.
Oh, Donna, oh, Donna, oh, Donna, oh, Donna. I had a girl, Donna was her name.
That's a killer. Let's see. Tallahassee Lassie by Freddie Cannon. There Goes My Baby by the Drifters. These are great.
Wonder where she is bound.
Now this is the end of August at the Hotel Savage. We know that Obama is ripping America to shreds. We know that he's doing everything he can to attack the middle class and wreck the economy so that he can justify greater state control over our lives. We know that under his rule, terrorists are infiltrating the nation. The Supreme Court is being infiltrated with unqualified Marxists. The Chinese are developing weapons that could easily take out an aircraft carrier, and that liberals are forcing various of their agenda items down the throats of America. But, hey, you're a human being, and I know you can only take so much of this bad news. I know that any human being with a brain can't sit and listen to the same bad news over and over and over again. I don't care how many, you know, other shows may repeat the same stuff over and over again. Republicans good, Democrats bad. Frankly, it's boring. And the whole midstream media, 90% of the so-called conservative media, is bleeding that one side is all pure and the other side is pure evil. I really can't take it anymore. You can't take it anymore. So why do it? Better to talk about dogs or boats or cameras than to have to sit through another minute of Beltway bilge. So today, I'll talk about the news a little bit. I'll tell you about the travesty of Elena Kagan's confirmation to the Supreme Court a little bit. I'll tell you we need to stop Somali immigration so that terrorists from that nation will stop coming into America. And I'll tell you about Michelle Obama's $375,000 people's vacation. But I'm not going to eat cake, and I'm not going to eat my heart out today.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question.
So now that Obama has Kagan, the pagan, ran through the Senate, he decided to get up today and play the comedian.
I am pleased that all of you could be here today as we celebrate the next member of our nation's highest court. And while she may be feeling a twinge of sadness about giving up the title of general, a cool title, I think we can all agree that Justice Elena Kagan has a pretty nice ring to it.
God, it doesn't end with these people. They take nothing seriously.
We are very honored to be joined today by two of Elena's new colleagues, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Anthony Kennedy. And we are thankful for their presence. Justice Kennedy assured me that he would keep Justice Kagan out of trouble. And Justice Ginsburg assured me that she would get Justice Kagan into trouble.
Yet another insult to Jews and Christians.
After more than 80 one-on-one meetings and 17 hours of testimony, I'd say that the Senate got a pretty good look at Elena Kagan. They got a good sense of her judicial philosophy, her commitment to the rule of law, her rich understanding of our Constitution, and, of course, where she can be found on Christmas Day. And
I don't know whether it's live from the White House or live from the Borscht Belt.
Chairman Leahy gave me wonderful advice throughout this process, and both he and Senator Sessions ensured that my hearing was serious and courteous. I also very much enjoyed meeting with 83 senators. But really, who's counting?
It's Rock and Roll Friday. It's summer in the city. And it may be the beginning of August in America, but it's the end of August at the Hotel Savage.
See the girl with the red dress song. She can do the burlap all night long. Yeah, yeah. What I say. All right.
It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
The news these days is really getting depressing. As we watch fundamental American values being tossed away like tissue paper, sometimes a nice escapist movie can help give some temporary relief. Well, next week, a throwback flick will be released with the same feel of those action movies of the 1980s. It's called The Expendables, an ensemble action flick that was co-written and directed by Sylvester Stallone. And Stallone was able to cast a group of action movie veterans to join him in basically what is a tribute to the genre, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, Dolph Lundgren, Mickey Rourke, and Jet Li. And he even got some of these more recent action flick leads like Jason Statham, Terry Crews, and Steve Austin. Now, Stallone had some choice comments about his fellow actors. He said that he thought that he had the ugliest group of guys on the planet in one movie. And he said he was proud of that. He said, quote, "We all look like horseshoes or catcher's mitts." Well, I guess it's okay to look like a catcher's mitt in an action flick. Now, this motion picture is not one of those realistic historical films, serious drama, or even one of those complex espionage flicks. The characters are somewhat two-dimensional and a bit predictable. But this movie is uniquely a male diversion, a one that celebrates its simple entertainment value. And that's kind of nice. I mean, there seems to be a demand these days for movies involving a ragtag assemblage of rowdy dudes who take on a daring, dangerous mission. The Expendables follows similar plots in movies like The Losers and The A-Team. In The Expendables, the group happens to be a team of highly trained, dangerous mercenaries who are sent on a mission to a South American country island of Velena. Satisfyingly, their goal is to overthrow a totalitarian dictator. Now, these guys are mercenaries. They work for cash. They had just finished taking out a bunch of Somali pirates And now we're presented with a new gig to overthrow this corrupt South American dictator. No, unfortunately, it's not Hugo Chavez. And the plot isn't new, but it has a freshness that comes from the cast, the nostalgia, the tongue-in-cheek dialogue, and the excellent pacing, which you need in an action movie. And you gotta love the characters' names in this movie.
Well, like what?
Stallone is Barney the Schizo Ross. He's a paramilitary veteran and leader of the team. Statham plays a guy named Lee Christmas. He's the second in command, and of course, he's an expert at close quarters combat. Jet Li, I love this name, is Yin Yang, a Chinese martial arts expert. Well, that figures. Dolph Lundgren is Gunnar Jensen, a Swedish sniper. And Terry Crews, gotta love this name, Hail Caesar, I kid you not, a weapons specialist. Randy Couture is a guy named Toll Road, a demolitions expert. And Mickey Rourke, his name is Tool, and he's a former expendable, now an arms dealer. Bruce Willis's character is the mysterious Mr. Church, the man who hires the expendables. Schwarzenegger's name is Trench, who's a rival of Stallone's character and the former leader of the original Expendables.
Hmm.
And there's a couple of female actresses, Charisma Carpenter, I love her regular name. Well, she plays a fiance to one of the characters named Lacey. And Lauren Jones plays a female named Cheyenne, who is Mickey Rourke's character's love interest. And a new leading lady, her name is Giselle Ichi, plays Sandra, which is Stallone's love interest. And as a matter of fact, she is, of course, breathtakingly gorgeous. And in the movie, Stallone and his guys initially turned down the dangerous mission. But as soon as Stallone's character meets this beautiful rebel daughter and undercover agent, he decides, well, money isn't everything.
Well, of course.
Stallone and his casting directors attempted to bring in even more action stars.
Who's that?
They tried, and a lot of people were disappointed this didn't happen, but they tried to bring in Jean-Claude Van Damme and his, you know, kicks. And Van Damme turned it down. Stallone told the press that Van Damme told him that Stallone's character should be trying to save people in South Central, meaning South Central L.A. The role of Hail Caesar was initially conceived for the guy who co-starred with Stallone in that movie Demolition Man, Wesley Snipes. The part was rewritten for Forrest Whitaker, maybe because of Snipes' tax problems. And due to a scheduling conflict before the movie started filming, Whitaker was replaced by 50 Cent, and eventually it went to a former NFL player, Terry Crews. I mean, Steven Seagal was even asked to come into the movie, so they really went to everybody. The role of the man who hires the Expendables, Mr. Church, was originally offered to Schwarzenegger, but he had problems with meeting the production schedule because, you know, he's the governor of California.
Mm-hmm.
It even impacted the film's Los Angeles premiere.
Why?
Because out in front of the theater, behind the red carpet, there they were, California state workers who were protesting pay cuts by Schwarzenegger. Protesting pay cuts in a state that's $20 billion in the red. The role was then offered to Kurt Russell, but ended up with Stallone's buddy and former partner in Planet Hollywood, Bruce Willis. Now, the movie has immediacy. It has that comic book quality, and so, since it's an action movie, it's got its share of violence. And the action in The Expendables is brutal, so it's not for the little ones. It's fast, it's hard-hitting, it's versatile. Lots of car chases. I mean, it even opens with a high body count rescue. Unfortunately, some Hollywood plot lines have been inserted.
Like we didn't see that coming.
Having the bad guys engage in waterboarding and having a renegade CIA character involved with the dictator. But it's okay, because what's really the most enjoyable part of this movie is seeing so many of these screen legends in action together. We get to watch a scene with Stallone, Bruce Willis, and the moonlighting Governator Arnold. I mean, where else can you go to a flick and watch Jet Li and Dolph Lundgren fighting, Stallone and Statham fighting side by side, and see a match between Steve Austin and Randy Couture? I mean, it may not be Jane Austen, but for the fans of action films, especially those of the past, it brings some needed fun. And that title, The Expendables, kind of reminds us what we're going to do to certain politicians in a couple of months.
Hey, thanks for the report, James.
Thanks, Michael, for being the action hero of the airwaves. Back to you, my friend.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Joining us now with an exclusive update is Robert Scott Bell.
Michael, it's always good to be back with you and the Savage Nation to rock the health world for liberty, and I'm grateful to be here. This week, there's a lot of news items attacking dietary supplements, as if that's really news, but the way it's come about is rather interesting. They're piling on from Consumer Reports, normally an unbiased type reviewer of products and categories and such, but they came out with a doozy. They call it the Dirty Dozen. The Dirty Dozen supplements to avoid, and this was covered on all the mainstream outlets as if it was a concerted effort, an attack on natural remedies, for instance. And I'm going to tell you some things here the rest of the media will not cover, as you cover on the Savage Nation every day. Now, this hit piece, I'll call it that, this hit piece on dietary supplements is embarrassing. Not for the supplements, but for those who are doing the attacking or those who align themselves to this attack. Consumer Reports has said there are 12 supplements that we looked at that we think are the dirty ones you should avoid at all costs. Should we now? Now let's look at this a little further. And it was really interesting when I saw the ABC News report on this. They actually quoted somebody, a doctor, an expert on this, and said they're very concerned because they're finding dangerous substances in the dietary supplements, including, get this, prescription drugs. I don't think anybody on ABC caught that for them to let that out. They actually acknowledged dangerous prescription drugs were being found in supplements. Of course, if a prescription drug is found in a dietary supplement, it's not a dietary supplement. So why are they attacking the supplements?
Exactly.
Now, they listed these 12 in so-called alphabetical order, but let me tell you about the first one. This is really interesting. And those of your listeners that know about homeopathic medicine will have heard of this. It's called aconite. Aconite, but in an herbal form, it's known as the monk's hood. And I have learned of it in homeopathy. It's called the deadly monk's hood because it is a potentially very toxic substance. And in all my years, Michael, I've been traveling to natural product stores and health food stores throughout this country over 20 years now. And I have yet to see the one health food store that is carrying aconite as an herb. As a homeopathic medicine, of course, it is completely non-toxic and you couldn't consume enough to create a toxic reaction. Which brings me to another point that Consumer Reports and all the media that's trouncing this story to show how dangerous dietary supplements are failing to acknowledge.
What is that?
That every substance on planet Earth is potentially toxic, potentially poisonous, based on, of course, dose. All poisons are dose dependent. You can drown in water. You can drink too much water, throw your electrolytes so far off, you can die of excess water consumption. Naturally good for you supplements, herbs, anything. But the thing is, they also neglect is the fact that FDA approved drugs, and this was again according to the Starfield report in the Journal of the American Medical Association year 2000, was shown to cause at least 225,000 deaths a year. And we're not talking about abuse. We're not talking about improper use. We're talking about label indications or prescription indications. And yet, there was a 2008 report the poison control, the data center, the National Data Center, gathered up all of the data regarding dietary supplements, and we covered it here earlier on the Savage Nation, and they found out that, wow, there was zero deaths in the entire year due to dietary supplements, none for herbs, none for vitamins, none for minerals. And, of course, here we now have a hit piece saying, wow, you've got to avoid these dangerous supplements. But who's dying? They're not dropping dead in the streets of taking dietary supplements. It's just not happening, Michael. And even the so-called dangerous ephedra, you remember that from a few years back, ephedra itself, the RAND report, which was the government report on it, came out after all was said and done. They found maybe four or five people that were really harmed by it. And, of course, those people were also on other medicines, other drugs, so there were mitigating circumstances. They were abusing it, using it improperly, and they were harmed by it. Yet, pseudoephedrine, the synthetic pharmaceutical variety of ephedra, is still on the market today, although the natural form that has been used for thousands, yes, thousands of years of recorded use, was banned by the federal government, by the FDA. Why is pseudoephedrine still on the market? That's a good question. It is the base component for the street production, the street lab production of crystal meth. That's okay, but the ephedra is not the naturally occurring.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
So we have, obviously, kind of an upside-down perspective from our nanny state government saying, hey, we can't have you have the freedom to choose supplements. You might get hurt. Yet, very few, if any, are getting hurt, and certainly nobody is dying, according to Poison Control Center data. So what is this attack really about? That is what we should be asking. Why indeed? I think maybe, Michael, you might be selling too many of your books, Healing Children Naturally. They don't like it because that means maybe one less kid is going to be hopped up on antibiotic drugs needlessly. And then, of course, less likely to be part of the contributing factors to the resistant strains of microbes that are growing out of control all over our nation's hospitals, in the athletic centers around the country, in the high schools, all of this. So your book is doing great work. I wonder if this is it. They're going to try and ban that like they banned you in Britain, because they're certainly working very hard at turning the public against dietary supplements. But I don't think it's working. I think this is a desperate ploy. This is a desperate attempt. The attack on supplements is nothing but an attack on competition. The freedom of the free market that doesn't exist in America for healing substances, for nutritional substances, for things that would counter the need, the supposed need, the artificial need, the hypnotized need for drugs for everything. Drugs for everything. And of course, we get into the controversy of vaccination. And I've been covering this for a long time, Michael. The growth of this idea that the human papillomavirus is causing cervical cancer in women later in their 20s and their 30s, 20 years after exposure or such like that. And as I looked further into this, I said, you know, this is kind of strange. How can they claim that a virus that you have contracted 20 to 30 years earlier causes cancer 20 to 30 years later? Don't we know the nature of a virus? It's not living. It goes in, it steals your genetic material, explodes out replicant copies until your immune system can catch up and obliterate it. And then, of course, you may have antibodies to that virus naturally developed, conferred, and this is a good thing because you're stronger. You survive.
Right, right, right.
And so this HPV thing is incredible because we saw that Merck came out with Gardasil and suddenly they were dropping hints for the last couple of years that maybe it's not just women that they want to target with their vaccine. And then we've got the GSK Cervarix that was coming out to compete with it. And now suddenly not only is it causing the cervical cancers, but now they're claiming it's causing throat and neck cancers. How are they determining this? I want to know. Anybody with a degree of journalistic integrity should be asking the question rather than just blindly saying, I worship the scientists and this is scientism. Science is religion instead of science. And so I'm asking the questions that I know you do as well. But it's an agenda, as we know, to sell product in a almost mandated marketplace where we are told wrongly that children are required to be injected with experimental medicaments in order to go to school, rather than allowing parents, families, to make these decisions with their doctors without being pressured by government regulators or those with conflicts of interest, maybe running up into the hundreds of millions of dollars. These are very real issues here as we speak for freedom, medical freedom, liberty. So I think they might as well just come out and say it. HPV causes everything. Another assorted medical nonsense. And then there's more on this. You know, they want to, again, bash supplements. Yet they're actually considering approving an extension to the exclusive patent of Pfizer for Viagra. I'm not kidding. But you will never believe who they want to give the Viagra to.
Well, who's that?
Kids.
What? No.
They want to prescribe Viagra to kids because now they're saying, well, we think it may help in certain specific lung ailments because it redirects blood flow.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, that's why they found out the side effect of what was before it was called Viagra. And so another side effect now becomes a direct effect for children, robbing them of perhaps their childhood by accelerating things that should not be happening in children just to get 6 months more of exclusivity. This is not science. This is madness. Again, that's why I love what you've done, Michael, with your book, Healing Children Naturally, because it's bringing parents, families back to these concepts that our children need nutrition. They don't need drugs, or if they do, maybe it's a last resort at appropriate place for medical intervention. And so there's a lot of other things on this list that Consumer Reports came out about, and I'm happy to see a lot of consumers are questioning the results rather than running for their FDA-approved drugs to replace that which is not killing anybody, in fact. There's another great remedy, an herb called lobelia. But boy, oh boy, if you read the common names, Michael, no one would want to take it. It's also known as pukeweed and vomitwort. I kid you not. But in reality, when you utilize it appropriately, again, remember, toxicity, poison, dose-dependent. You can utilize it safely if you know what you're doing, but let's face it, doctors by and large are not trained in herbs, yet they're passing sentences on herbs. And of course, herbalists may not be trained in drugs, and it's not maybe appropriate for them to pass sentence on drugs. Yet the statistics are out there, I think, for any layperson to look at and question, maybe I should try the natural remedies first and have the drugs as a last resort.
Exactly.
So you may think it's an exaggeration, okay, a little bit, when I say HPV causes everything, okay? But you might as well be saying this, because this concept that it's always about some mysterious virus that only these so-called experts can clear up or help us clear up, it really directs us and disempowers us in a way that we become victims of disease rather than having the understanding, the concept, the freedom to make decisions about our own medical futures, our own health. And for the FDA to approve Gardasil and Cervarix for administration at fast food drive-thrus and mini mall kiosks, this is seemingly where it's heading. But I think it's really the result of the medical industrial complex in collusion with big government and big media in claiming the throat and neck cancers are also due to HPV. We need reporters, we need journalists to ask the tough questions, because I don't believe their proof is nearly enough. And we've seen enough adverse events reported among little girls getting the shots, including Guillain-Barré, neurological issues, and some deaths have been reported around the world to the shot. We need the information. We need the freedom to act on that information. If you have a natural substance, though, Michael, that can eliminate a virus, which we do know of, you know of them, I know of them, we've talked about them, you become an enemy of a state for acknowledging it and or making it or selling it. That, to me, seems un-American. If you've got a solution to a problem and it harms no one, why is that criminal to bring that out to the marketplace? That tells you how far we have drifted from freedom. And certainly Obamacare is only making it much worse as it's mandating participation in a system of medicine that is, albeit right and appropriate for interventions in life and death matters, but certainly in managing or, let's say, reversing chronic diseases, bringing health about, they haven't a clue as to what to do, but the people do. And I think they're waking up to the absurdity of Consumer Reports claiming there are a dirty dozen that should be avoided of dietary supplements at all costs when there have been no deaths occurring to these things in recent years. And of course, modern medicine and their drugs are creating all kinds of death, destruction, mayhem, and havoc. Not a culture of life that I can see.
Well, thanks for the report, Robert. Where can we read more?
If you want to learn more about these stories and more, I've got them linked on my website at robertscottbell.com. Michael, thank you so much for having me back on.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello.
I think I'm gonna cry. Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, sweet.
Well, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Look, the First Lady is, I don't know, a combination of, they're calling her Marie Antoinette, Madame Defarge, you name it. She now requires 26 servants. They say that they reported on July 7th that she was served by 22 attendants, so stand by to cater to Michelle Obama's every whim, the person who's down with the people. Turns out she has 26 attendants, including a full-time hairdresser and makeup artist. Annual cost to you, the schmuck, $1.75 million a year, which, without taking into account the expense of the lavish benefit packages offered to every attendant. Now, when Obama called for change, did you think you were going to get an oligarchy? No. Uh-huh. The discovery of the additional attendants was made by D'Angelo Gore of factcheck.org, by the way. The article, which became a chain letter viewed by millions of Americans, reported that Michelle Obama requires more than 20 attendants, more than any first lady in U.S. history. And I have the list, if you think we're making it up. Well, why read it? You get the picture. 26 servants for Michelle, a lady of the people. What a disgrace. What two con artists these two are. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. All right, here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. Chinese missile? Oh, Chinese missile? What? Chinese? Well, with our technology given to them by the Democrats under the Clinton administration, you know all of the characters. You forgot their names? Old Sandy Berger? You forgot old Sandy Berger? Sox Berger? You forgot the head of the DNC at the time who shared missile technology with them? Oh, yeah. Well, now a Chinese missile can knock out one of our aircraft carriers. Read all about it on MichaelSavage.com. Missouri's rebuke of Obamacare sets tone for fall elections, whatever that means. The new Al-Qaeda leader lived for 15 years in the United States. Very familiar with our society, brought in by the Democrats under asylum. Oh, yeah. New Jersey judge overlooked forced sex because Muslim was acting on beliefs. The judge ruled the ex-husband felt he had behaved according to his Muslim beliefs and that he did not have criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault his wife. He was just being a good Muslim.
Jesus.
Associated Press. A judge says a convert is not required to reunite with Muslim parents. From black shirts to black robes, read my writing on Michael Savage. It's really good. Old Gibbs, the gefilte fish, Obama's personal gefilte fish who comes in a jar, says the Missouri vote against Obamacare is meaningless. Really? New documents from WorldNet Daily point to Indonesian citizenship for yours truly. No, not me. I mean his truly. That's right. ICE agents vote no confidence in leadership. In an unprecedented move within the Department of Homeland Security, the special agents responsible for enforcing our nation's immigration laws issued an exhaustive scathing letter against Big Sis Napolitano and her cronies who were stopping them from doing their job. You talk about a division. Let's hear some more rock and roll.
Ding-a-ding-ding-dong-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. Boom-ba-da. Ba-do-ba-do-ba-day-wo.
1-800-449-8255. Healing children naturally, A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints, only on MichaelSavage.com. I have not, Beowulf, have you gone to, oh, by the way, here's a great one on Michael Savage. Thinking about God calms believers and stresses atheists. Researchers have determined that thinking about God can help relieve anxiety associated with making mistakes. However, the finding only holds for people who believe in God. Those atheists who hear about God get agitated and get actually sicker. And despite budget cuts, teachers fight for taxpayer-funded Viagra.
Oh, my God.
That's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Budget cuts, but the teachers still want their Viagra. Read the story. It's on michaelsavage.com, stuff you won't see in your local newspaper. And one other thing, Beowulf, how do you go on Amazon to see where my book, Trickle Up Poverty, is today?
What you do is you go on, to, you do an Amazon search, go Amazon.com, do a search for Trickle Up Poverty. If you scroll down in the middle of the page, you'll see the ranking, the pre-order ranking for...
All right, it's interesting. Well, it's 2 months to go, and I guess I shouldn't be talking about it, but people are curious. The cover is there, the outline is there, a chapter or two in review, so look... I can't wait for the book to come out. That's it for today on The Savage Nation.
Savage.